Welcome back to Can You Keep a Secret, part of the Pull Tab Sports family. Garrity, we got this is, I think, in many ways, when we decided to go into the wilderness and become entrepreneurs, in my head, I was imagining an afternoon a little bit like today with the wolf here, with his cowboy hat on, and and really no game plan, because if you've spoken to Wolfie, you know the best laid plans are just best laid plans.
No plans.
But I'll give you some context, listeners. This is Private Conversations with Public Figures. We are here today with Mr. Bob Wolf, otherwise known as the Wolfie. He has been all over Nashville, all over the United States, all over St. Paul. And it's basically like meeting a member of the Highwaymen. Like he'd be Highwaymen adjacent. I would say his stories are on par with the Waylands.
I was going to go more with Forrest Gump, but man, you got to
There's definitely a little Forrest Gump in here. So anybody, I don't care what you're doing, you need to stick with us, because this is going to be
a wild ride.
No
crazy. Yeah, crazy.
In the modern day, he is the owner of Green Wolf Hemp and Organics. No free ads. But he, we'll get into that business as well. Later. But first of all, just welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me. This is great.
Welcome.
And I would like to point out, he is not wearing headphones because he looks so damn good in a cowboy hat that we can't mess with that. That would have screwed up the whole thing. But let's ease into this. Why don't you just tell us, let's start with Wolfie's in Nashville.
Yeah.
And I know your story is bigger and grander than that, but let's talk about this venue you had. How did it happen? What happened there? And just tell us a little bit about this joint.
So, little tiny bit of backstory to this. Restaurant business and music business is what I've been in most of my life. And I had landed back in Nashville, literally, with a motorcycle accident on Highway 65. So that next day, I got a job washing dishes at the hotel. Take it further to the place where I just lucked into becoming a general manager at a place called the Gerst House, which is just famous all over the place in Tennessee. Nashville being the state capital, we had obviously the legislators there, the senators, everybody. Well, the Gerst House was right by the interstate, so they could drink like 6 or 7 or 10 fish bowls, 18 ounces, and jump right up on the interstate and go home.
Yep.
So it was kind of like safe for the guys.
Perfect.
Right. So, you know, I got to meet everybody, the mayor, you know, and wound up taking care of those people. It's kind of hospitality, and that's what I do. So getting to that, I did the Gerst House for about 9 years and opened up a catering company for them where we did the national network and catered all the TV shows. And so made a little bit of money and decided that I wanted to finally have my own place, which was crazy as hell, but that's what I decided that day. So I basically just got to work with the mayor. Mayor Bredesen was his name, great guy. And this is now at a time when Nashville, what you see down there now, which is just total craziness.
It's Vegas.
It's Vegas. It is. It's just nuts. Vegas without the strippers, I think. Is what
Vegas in white boots.
Yeah, in white boots. Anyway, you know, it was crazy and it was nasty, and the mayor wanted to build an arena. So he and I had worked on that, and I literally was with him when the idea came up, when he asked me, why didn't Garth Brooks play, you know, why does he only play the Ryman? And, you know, can't play here in town. And I said, we got a place that seats like 6,000 people, and they don't make money doing that. Next thing you know, we're building an arena. So someone had to go down and clean it up, and the whole downtown. So unfortunately, it was my wife and I, but it fortunately became fortunate. But first couple of years was crazy. I mean, it was homelessness. It was 50-cent canned beer next door, people's throats getting cut. That was Nashville. That was Broadway, no joke. Yes. So they had poker machines in the back room, you know, that the cops were kind of protecting. And I'm supposed to be down there calling the police for the mayor so we can clean the place up, get new business, and build an arena. Hence, fast forward 2 years later, we kind of got rid of the homeless. We moved the mission out of town, which was the smartest thing we've ever done, out of downtown. And I got to open up my own place, and it was called Wolfie's, obviously, hence the name Wolfie. And, you know, we had 2 years. We had to kind of bust our ass, and can I say ass here?
You sure can.
Say whatever you want.
I will.
Were you a stone's throw from Bridgestone?
Across the street.
So you would go to a hockey game, and this was like basically like Eagle Street in St. Paul?
It's really funny you say that. That's exactly who I – when we talk about Eagle Street, I said this is Wolfie's. It literally is across the street. But see, we were there first for 2 years. They had to build the whole arena.
Yes.
They had to do like eminent domain on the property, all that stuff. So it took a while. But we stayed open because the construction crew that was building the arena.
Oh, yeah.
I did a all-you-can-eat buffet at lunch, and they knew that we were kind of part of the game down there to help it grow. So they supported us for about a good year and kept us alive. That and then the music started. I mean, it was always about music. The place was called Diamond in the Rough. Elton John's writer, Nigel Olsen, I guess, him and another partner opened this place. And what I loved about it was that it wasn't a dance hall. It was a listening room. So you brought artists in, you shut your mouth, you sit there and you enjoy everything, you know, songwriting. Not quite like the Bluebird down there where you just shh everybody. So Wolfie's became pretty much the staple down on Broadway at first. It was before Tootsie's opened up for the second time. And I, my two big mistakes, I'll go with the first one right now, is I had an option to walk into Tootsie's, which is now worth probably, I'm not joking you, over $1 billion, this guy.
Yeah.
He has parlayed this into a huge fortune downtown. But so I said, no, I want to do a restaurant. You know, I made so many great decisions in my life. It's just
stay hot.
That's
crazy.
That's why we get along so well.
Of course. You know, it's what you do. Anyway, Wolfie's became a staple down there because what happened was after 2 years, finally – We got the arena built, but we didn't have an anchor team yet. And that's when I wound up meeting the guy that brought me here.
Yeah.
And brought me to Minnesota, actually. But so I was working with the mayor, and they were looking for an anchor team, and this guy came to town named Craig Leopold.
Heard of him.
And yes, I think we all did, I think. But he wanted a basketball team, and that's basically what he really wanted. But we had an arena, and the mayor was like, look, any sports team we can get, we will help you get that. And I won't go into money and figures, but he got, you know, he got a lot of help from the city of Nashville to buy the Nashville Predators, a hockey team, because that was the first thing that was available as a franchise. So parlay into Wolfie's, it started out with music and then became the hockey place with music. And, you know, people that started in the club were, you know, so Gretchen Wilson, the redneck woman, she was my bartender for at least 8 or 9 months.
Really?
I got to tell you this about Gretchen. Gretchen was the first person that walked into my bar, and everybody that comes to Nashville is like, I'm a songwriter, I'm a singer, you know, oh, I'm a producer, I'm going to make this. She was the only person that I ever met in that city that never mentioned she sang.
She's just like, I'm looking for a waitress.
I need a bartender.
I'm a bartender.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. I need a bartender.
And that's probably why she is such a good singer.
She's an amazing chick. She's been through
hey,
it.
Will you do something for me, Wolfie? Sure. Because this is for the listeners. I would say having a conversation with the wolf is like riding a mechanical bull. So there's gonna be times where we're gonna grab
him. Tell him shut up.
We're gonna hog tie him from time to time. Most of our people haven't been in your place when it was there. Let's do a little theater of the mind. The Preds game just ended. I'm walking across the streets. This is after the 2 years with the construction guys.
Yep.
Just give me the vibe. Like, tell, like, walk me in there. I'm going to close my eyes and listen here.
So you're walking out of this beautiful arena that kind of looks like a spaceship. It has this huge tower out front that's glass. It's 4 stories high. And the doors open up after the game. And 17,000 people are filing out onto Broadway. And you're walking past the first place, which is Rippy's. You know, everybody now has a rooftop. But back then, you know, we had the band going. I mean, the minute the game was over at 9:30, those boys were on the stage and they hit it, because the minute people started walking by, you want to let them know, hey, we're open, come on in. But, you know, after 15 minutes after the game, Wolfie's probably sat legally 125 people. There'd be 300 people in that place. It'd be insane. And, you know, we'd have the Flyers. The whole team came in one time. LeClaire.
Yeah, tell that story about there was a little maybe miscommunication.
Lindros?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. So the Flyers, as I said, came in one night after they just beat the living hell out of us. And it was a year they were probably going to contend for the cup. I can't remember. Shit, I can't remember yesterday. But so they came in and, you know, we were packed. But I obviously did everything I could to get them to sit. And they wanted to eat. So they wanted hamburgers and beers. That's what we were known for. So I got him a table. Everybody started booing and giving us hell. Well, Wolfie would always get up on stage. Shit, get out of crazy. I'm up on stage. You know, you're screaming, you're yelling, you're fighting, whatever. So I got up on stage and said, hey, guys, they're probably going to take the cup this year. Let's give them a little bit of credit. I said, you know, let's give them a nice round of applause. Smooth everything over. Next thing you know, autographs all night long. And they were nice enough to do it. But they were eating burgers and beer. And they're sitting there, and they've just finished their dinner, and next thing I know, Lindros gets up, and he starts walking. I'm standing at the front door of Wolfie's, which literally faces Broadway and Tootsie's, and Lindros walks out, and if you go out my door and take a left and take a right, you'll go up to the hotel where all the hockey teams stayed. So he comes up to the door, and I said, dude, where are you going? He says, I'm not feeling real good. I said, what's up? And he's holding his side. So I didn't go further. I said, you want me to? So I walked him halfway up to the hotel. He said, I'm good from here. And that's the night he actually was in the bathtub and found out that his lungs or his kidneys, I think, were bleeding.
Yeah, spleen maybe.
The spleen, is that what it was?
Seems like NHL guys' spleens explode. Broke a spleen. I don't know why.
Could have been.
But yeah, okay, so he gets a medical condition.
So he gets the medical condition in there, and he's on, you know, they take care of him, and the next day I turn on, and I'm turning on sports in the morning with my coffee, and all of a sudden there's Eric Lindros being interviewed, and he says, yeah, I'm sitting at this place in Nashville called Wolfie's. He said, and I had a beer and a burger, and next thing you know, I got so sick. He said, I just couldn't walk. Listening to this, and I'm going, Jesus, Eric, come on, dude. Oh. I even bought you the damn hamburger, which was funny. But no, so I called him up. We sent him some flowers that day and called him up, and he said, hey, man, I'm sorry. He said, I didn't mean it like that. I said, it didn't come off like that. You know, everybody knew the truth. Anyway, so LeClaire was in there that night. I mean, we just had them all. So Wolfie's was known as a hockey bar and the music bar.
And an iconic bar, because there's a story. There's a tradition in Nashville that continues to this day. It was featured in an NHL commercial just this year. Tell us how that special tradition in Nashville started with tossing something on the ice.
Alcohol. One word.
That's true. But it was a good old fashioned brainstorm.
It really was.
So
what happened there? So we had a little bunch of guys that used to come in for every game called the Wolfie's Brew Crew, the Predators Brew Crew is what it was. And there's like five or six of these guys, old guys with beards, you know, just big old hockey fans from half of them from up north, moved to Nashville and worked at the Springfield plant. Building cars, but they were from up north. So they were all in the club, and we'd be sitting there one day, and we had just gotten the team, and we really hadn't even had but a game or two, I think, and Detroit was on the bill. And I said, we were all sitting around, and had Jack sitting on the table doing shots and getting ready to go to our game, and we're sitting there talking, and I said, you know what? I said, these guys, they throw octopus on the damn ice. I said, you know that, right? I said, what the hell? We need to throw something back at them. And everybody laughs. Said, well, what are we going to throw back at him? So I don't know, but we definitely need to do this. So we started talking and thinking about things, and obviously somebody said, well, guitar pick. I said, you can't even see the thing. You know, and the other guy said, well, Jack Daniels, that's Tennessee. I said, you can't throw the bottle on the ice. So we're talking, and we keep talking, and finally I got up. I said, I'll be right back. And I just walking, thinking. And I walked outside again through that front door across from Tootsie's, only I looked to the right, and there's the river. You know, the Cumberland River's down there, right there, two blocks away.
Yep.
And I went, holy shit, catfish, Tennessee, we're all about catfish. So I went back in and I said, guys, I got it, catfish. And they went, oh, my God. So we had another shot, and we decided that the next day, 2 days later, because the game was in 3 days, I went down to the fish market, local fish market, and I asked the guy, I said, hey, you know, I need a whole catfish. Well, the only fish he had was like 9 pounds. It was huge. So I don't know if you've seen the commercial for the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, it's large in the commercial.
For the
too.
Preds, yeah. That's exactly what I did.
What do you do?
So I bought this huge fish, and I wrapped it in newspaper, okay? And I had to sneak it in, obviously, even though everybody in the arena knew who I was. But still, I snuck it in under my Preds T-shirt, you know, my hoodie, and I got a little bit of a gut here anyway,
no.
So it wasn't hard. No, come on.
No.
You're so sweet. All right. So anyway, I snuck this fish in, and I had seats, special seats, that were down by the glass, and we had three other guys stationed in the arena that were going to the game that when I threw this fish, we were all getting up to run. That way they had no idea who the hell. Diversion.
That's the best.
The diversion.
That's like the fake caravan with the president. I mean, that is the fact that you took it to that level that you had fake runners. That's so good. So they needed when did you throw it? Do you throw it
after the first goal?
After the first goal. So you needed them to score.
Exactly. And they didn't score for almost the third period.
Wow.
And I'm sitting there with this thing is sweating and getting nasty. And I have a beautiful lady sitting on the right of me who I had no idea who she was. And obviously nobody said anything.
Can she smell it?
Yeah, I could smell it. Jesus Christmas. Never mind. I'm going to behave.
No, that's okay.
The old outlaw almost came out there for a second. So, so they finally scored the damn thing. And I unwrap the damn thing. And I get under my seat. And I pick it up. And I get on and throw it. And it's the damn net sitting right there for the goal. I forgot all about the net. So the damn thing comes back.
Come on, I swear
to God.
Holy
ball's
shit.
Down in front of me. I picked the thing up. I went over a couple things, and I threw it. Everybody's running by now.
Yeah.
You know, you missed the first shot.
Yeah.
Well, obviously after that, everybody kind of knew who it was. But Leopold didn't even know. We didn't tell Craig. You know, he honestly could not say who threw that catfish. So that became a tradition.
And organically? So people just started doing it?
Well, I had a club upstairs in the tower, that glass tower on the third floor. It was called Wolfie's Den. And it became a tradition where if you wanted to throw a catfish.
I got it, yep.
I'd have five or six of them up there, and we'd give it to you and let you go in and throw it. Just to build a tradition.
God, I love that.
They,
I love that.
They still do that?
Yeah.
No.
It's every Stanley
game?
Cup? No, not every
just
game.
Just the playoffs?
I think or more towards games? The playoffs now, you know. The funny thing is the Titans got a hold of it for a while, and you had about seven of them. And those guys, when they do everything just off the charts. They got three fish in each hand. You know, got a Budweiser can in one of the fish.
Yeah, I've seen a guy drink, I think, a beer through a catfish.
Through the fish, yeah.
One of the Titans.
Yeah, it's gotten crazy.
Can You Keep a Secret is sponsored by Chill Boys. It's been hot. It's been nice, but it's been hot. And if you need that Coors Light Silver Bullet train, you want to have that feeling of that train running right between your legs, you need a pair of life-changing bamboo boxers and briefs. It's like menthol for your man parts. I swear to God, you open these packages, you'll put it on your cheek, both of your cheeks and your other cheeks, and you're just going to feel the cool. It's unbelievable. Quit putting your balls in a Velcro wallet. Get some decent underwear. Check out Chill Boys at chillboys.com. Use PULLTAB15 for a deal. And if you find yourself on the golf course, please use the Grint app. It keeps an official handicap. It's got GPS. You can do games. It's all there, and it's social. You get a birdie, you're going to get an attaboy from a buddy. Check out the Grint, where golf happens. The heart of your story, we're going to get into it. If anybody's watched the documentary on We Are the World on Netflix, which is outstanding, we'll get into the role and kind of a really special piece that Wolfie played in that story. But I want to finish on one more story from your club. Can you tell us about Mr. Dirks Bentley? He had a hat trick of his own, I think, at your place.
Hat trick, I love that. So this is a lot of the artists would come into Wolfie's because the record labels knew our club. And like I said, the difference with Wolfie's was you didn't dance there. You had to listen. So you sat there to come listen to an artist. And if some of the up-and-coming artists that needed a place to showcase for the record label and didn't have a lot of money, you know, they'd come to the club owner and say, hey, you know, can we play here? We'll bring you a little bit of a crowd. The record label's going to be here. So that's sometimes how we got some of these guys that came in. You know, I'm a musician myself, obviously. I played with everybody. But those guys, you know, are just, you want to help them out. That's what we're down there for.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy named Jay Andrews, a steel player, comes up to me and he says, hey, there's this dude over here named Dirks Bentley. And he says, I know the guy. He says, he's got, you know, I forgot which, it doesn't matter. One of the labels was going to come and do a showcase. He said, you know, would you mind putting him up on stage? So I said, hell no, bring him in. So we met him and he got up on stage. And, you know, the first night, this became a weekly thing for about 4 weeks, 5 weeks. And he got up on stage and, you know, the first night, good looking kid, young kid, you know, good singer. No, I didn't think he was actually great at the time. He was very green still at the time, I thought. You know, very young. But he got up on stage, did a decent job. You know, that wasn't the label night. So a week later was the night when he was supposed to do a showcase, but they canceled. Well, he got drunk that night. to the point where even the band wanted to kind of, well, and you know what, in Dirks's behalf, he was really bummed out, you know, and he was. So, and, you know, geez, who ever heard of a musician getting drunk? I mean, you know, it's unheard of.
Oh, hey, we're in favor of
that. Yeah,
we're definitely want our musicians to be drunk.
I'm so happy for that kid, and I really am. And I am for all these guys that break through, because it's just nuts trying to do that. So Dirks gets on the next week, and he's drunk as hell, and his drummer comes over, or his guitar player came over to me and said, "You got to do something about Dirks." And I said, "What?" He said, "Dude, he can't even sing." I had just walked into the club. So I stood there for a minute and listened to him. And it was a night he was having. I'm not going to get into it too, because, you know, he doesn't deserve that. He had a bad night, and he basically just said, you know, "I don't want to do this, blah, blah, blah." And I walked up to him on stage, which I was known to do, and kind of whispered in his ear. I said, "Come on, I want to talk to you." He said, "What?" I said, "I need to talk to you." "Right now?" I said, "The band's going to take a break." So the band left. So obviously I said, "Dude, we can't do this." I said, and then I got pissed. I said, "You know what? You young guys don't understand. You don't get many chances here." I said, "These guys are coming in right now to listen to you in another week to get you a record deal, everything you've lived for. And you're sitting here shit-faced in my bar acting like an asshole." And it took 2 or 3 days, but he finally came back and he said, "I'm sorry." And he did. And it happened. This happens all the time. So I'll just leave it like that. Anyway, I really, again, I do care about all the artists that came through my club. We had so many great bands. Everybody's played at Wolfie's. That was the crazy thing about that little place. So, yeah, Dirks got his record deals at my bar. Finally, 2 weeks later, he got signed. And he played all the clubs downtown. They all did, you know. And, you know, he just, I was just shocked. Brad Paisley's another one, kind of got started there. Gretchen didn't. Gretchen just served drinks, which just blew me away. I was so pissed off when
Was she a good waitress?
She was a great bartender, great girl. She was, you know, she had some tough times. Like I said, Nashville's a crazy city. You know, your bartenders, your club owners, everybody's got a little bit of crazy in them. So she was, in a situation in her life where she had to get out of this other place she was working, because she was dating the owner or something. And so I gave her a job, didn't know who she was, didn't know anything. And then, like I said, about 8 or 9 months later, Kenny from Big and Rich comes in the club and starts talking to her. And I'm going like, "Where the hell does he know Gretchen?" And I go up to her and she says, "Yeah, I'm probably going to get a record deal." I looked at her and I said, "You never even told me you sang, girl."
Make a gin and tonic.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was a very special place. And, it was 13 years of my life. I got to experience so many different things, got to meet so many great people, in the hockey world, in the sports world, in the music world. It was just such a unique little place because we did a little bit of everything. But, yeah, it was Nashville. It's a completely different place right now. It kind of sold out a little bit, you know, and all those bars down there that everybody owns, they really kind of aren't the ones that own it. Although, what's his name? Great night the other night with Post Malone and Blake Shelton at Old Red at the club. You know, reminiscing those guys. I watched the whole thing and reminiscing about some of the stuff. And those two are clowns. I mean, Blake is a clown. There's no question. He's great, but he's funny. But like I said, you look at these kids now and they're kids, you know, shit, I'm old. But this is 20 years ago when they first kind of got started.
Did you sell it or you just got out?
I sold it. Okay. Sold it to my competition. Actually sold it to Tootsie's, the guy.
Okay. That's
kind of ironic,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah. You doubled down on your bad mistake.
Doubled down on the bad mistake.
You selling that bar right outside of Bridgestone makes me feel better about selling my Michael Jordan cards at the Thunderbird Hotel when I was in about 12th grade, because I can't imagine what that real estate is worth today.
Oh, yeah.
We need to hear from our sponsors here. Can You Keep a Secret is sponsored by Summit Mortgage and Sheldon Frank. It's not easy to buy a house. I went through the process myself with Sheldon, NMLS 213346 and Summit Mortgage. I should have bought him a bottle of scotch when we were done with this, because he gave me the white glove treatment. Every home buying situation is different. Sheldon's seen it all. In my case, I was starting a company, building a house. Interest rates were crazy. He got me pre-approved, and he gave me white glove service the whole way. Sheldon will be there for you. He's buttoned up and won't make mistakes. He's a hockey guy, so he only has pucks, no balls to drop. If you're looking to buy a house in Minnesota or Wisconsin, reach out to get pre-approved. Call Sheldon Frank, 612-232-1872. Summit Mortgage Corp, NMLS 1041, is an equal housing opportunity lender. And finally, we're sponsored by Custom One. Custom One makes the sort of houses that change lives, they change neighborhoods, they change entire communities. These are the showstoppers, the jaw droppers. You'll see them on the Parade of Homes Artisan Home Tour. They do renovations. They do exteriors. They do landscaping. They're your number one choice when it comes to home building or projects. Dream homes are real. Call the folks at Custom One. We're going to go back in time. We're going to move the pin in the map to Rome, Georgia, because really a defining event in your life. Little song called We Are the World. You're a radio DJ in Rome. I want to tell you the story. Tell the listeners the story of really a moment of serendipity playing the song and kind of what that turned into.
Sure.
Just a guy with an idea.
It really is just that. It was an idea that when it worked, I was obviously blown away seeing the results of what happened that day. But yeah, I was just a disc jockey. A little backstory. Got to have a little of that. I was playing drums with Johnny Paycheck for about 5 years. Take this job and shove it, dude.
Yeah.
And you know, we were running hard. That's all I can say. And one night I ran a little too hard, and that was when you call it what you want, but I call him God. Kind of come and said, "Hey, dude, And I got a wake up call that night. And I had to get out of playing drums, and I had to kind of get off the road and realize that those days are kind of like behind me for right now unless I can straighten my ass back up. We snorted Peru that night. That's all I can tell you. So I went to work at a radio station because a friend of mine said, "Dude, you got a great voice." I used to sing. So he said, "You got a good voice." He said, "You know, why don't we try to do your little show and showcase you to the boss and see if, you know." So I wound up doing that, and I got the gig, and I got the morning show. It was 71 Country, WROM, an AM station. Probably had 3 listeners when I started. You know, it was just fun. I was talking to myself every morning, but it was good because I could play anything I wanted. I was the music director, one of those you know, deals where you're everything, you know, you got one title and it's everything. So I was sitting there one morning and I was previewing kids, you're not even going to remember this. This is back when you had 45 records, okay, and turntables. And we had a preview turntable for when we were on the air, we could listen to something ourselves to see what it was. And every morning once a week, I think we'd get like 15, 20 singles, new ones that are coming in, new releases and stuff. And because of just what I really went through, you know, with the blow and having to leave the love of my life, which was playing the drums and making music, and that really was my passion, still is. It got very nostalgic for me to see a record that had 46 people that were in the business that I was in, obviously not on their part, but on their level. But 46 artists to be in one studio and to get along and record this record without egos, you know, before we all knew the real story of what Quincy did. But, you know, I was just blown away. It was like, Jesus, this is so cool, man. This is so freaking powerful. So I said, how the hell do I get to play this record on a country station? You know, all of a sudden I'm listening. There's God just told us. I said, Jesus Christ, that's Willie Nelson. Oh, my God. There you go.
Loophole.
Throw Willie on there. So I said, I gave this big preview that morning to my listeners, my 3 listeners, I guess. And I said, listen, guys, I said, I just told them what I told you. I said, you know, I've just been really moved by this. I said, Willie is on the record, so I'm going to be playing it for you. I said, so, you know, this is for the kids in Africa. It's for feeding people. I said, but for me, it's kind of like world unity. You know, it's kind of cool. It's bringing all these artists together.
We are the world.
Ladies and gentlemen, here it is. We are the world. I start the record, and I'm in about... The record's like 6 minutes and 20 seconds song. I'm about a minute and a half into the record, and I hear the knock on my door in the studio, and I'm going like, what the hell is this? Carol, my news director, opens the door, and she says, what are you doing? And okay, I just smoked a little doobie. I can't help it. I did. But the creativeness came out, and I thought I got busted joking around because we all kind of had fun. But so I said, what do you mean? I got a little paranoid. She said, come out here and listen to this. So I come out in the hallway. My sister station, K98, was sitting there, and they put the record on the exact same second. As a musician, I'm telling note for note.
Which is impossible.
Without knowing it, we didn't know we were doing it, you know? And I'm listening.
Were they smoking doobies too?
No, he was too damn straight.
Okay.
We, back in the day. So I had four radio stations. I had four speakers in the middle of the hallway for two stations, and I went, this is insane, dude. This is just crazy. I got goosebumps for minutes. And I said, you know what? Wouldn't this be cool if we got, like, the whole state to play this at the exact same time? Oh, Jesus, go back in the room, will you? I said, no, dude. What about the whole world? I said, wouldn't it be cool? I said, all we got to do is call the radio stations. Just, yeah, okay. And literally, that was his attitude. So I went back in the room, you know, and I went, bullshit. I got on the phone. I started calling people, friends that I knew in the industry. And to shorten this up a little bit, I got a connection up to Canada, the Westwood One, which is a big radio network.
Yep.
And a cool lady, the women of the radio industry, helped me with this. No joke. So she says, I got a friend over at the BBC. She said, well, first of all, I think this is a great idea. She said, I don't know if they're going to do it, but call my buddy Aidan Day. That was his name. And he was the director of the BBC radio. And I'm going like, okay, cool. So I got on the phone. I called BBC, right? And I asked for Aidan Day. He gets on the phone. I said, hey, listen, man. I said, I just talked to Judy, and she said that, you know, I should tell you this. And I got this plan on Good Friday at 10. I figured out a time that the
And I want to get into this. So you, the nerd side of this is amazing. You found time zones. Now, I mean, I'm imagining this is with like a yellow legal pad and a pencil.
You
and
did
you're,
it on the head.
Bro. But you're basically trying to find the time to play this six-minute song that has the best chance for the most people in the world to hear it, right?
Like, you're amazing that you remember that, and I appreciate that.
No, I mean, that side of it, and you're not getting paid. I want to point this out to the listeners.
No, like, hell no.
This is just
a guy. I was
getting
$250 a week.
Also, the pot you might have had that day could have been spectacular. But so you basically want to bring the world together one phone call at a time. And you found Good Friday was a moment. At what time was it again?
10:50 Eastern time.
A.M.?
A.M. Eastern time. Okay. So the reason for that is I figured 10 minutes, the sports and news always comes out top of the hour.
Yep.
So I had a 10-minute window from 10 till 11 to 11 o'clock Central time to do this, do the introduction, do a little talking, and play a six-minute and change record. And I did. I stayed up at least all night that night just looking at the map. And remember, this is in 1985. There's no Google. There's no, hey, Google, you know.
Yeah.
No. This is encyclopedias. This is just going back and seriously doing research. So I found that the most people that would be awake around the world at that would be at that time. You know, check the hour differences all around. So we set the time at 10:50, and I started making phone calls. And that Aidan Day dude says, Wolf, you know, this sounds like a crazy American idea, but we'll do it.
He's BBC.
He is the whole BBC, the entire British Broadcasting Corporation.
Which is unbelievable. And then there's another group called, like, isn't there like a radio government group or something that got involved?
So we had United States Armed Services Radio Network.
Yep.
We had Judy Massa was with Armed Forces Radio. I can't remember.
You basically got all of these different entities.
We had thousands of stations, so to say yes. And, you know, I didn't honestly, I know it sounds crazy, but, you know, it's everything's moving so fast. I didn't have time to grasp what the hell was going on. I just didn't. It's just cool. They'll do it. Okay, they'll do it. And no joke, that yellow legal pad you're talking about was on my desk. Every confirmation we got, I was writing them down who they were. I was getting calls from Rolling Stone magazine. I was getting calls from, this is preview, before the day when we had announced that we're going to do this, because they wanted to give us press. So everybody jumped in, and if you ever watch, if you want to see a little backtrack, it's if you Google Bob Wolf, We Are the World, there's a video that comes up with a cowboy hat guy, and that's me, and it's kind of two stories. It shows what happened that day around the whole world, and that's what blew me away. So I was born in Brooklyn, and I didn't like New York, okay? Never liked it. People were rude at the time when I was a kid, so I left. But one of the most moving moments I saw that day was St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York. they just, all they did was put speakers out to be part of this. And thousands of New Yorkers showed up. It's on that tape. Thousands of New Yorkers showed up and sang the damn song. It was like, so, I mean, I'm watching all this after this is happening. And I've just, it's unbelievable that the whole world is stopping and playing a song and listening to listening to a record. Yeah, I mean, it was a miracle to me. I can't take credit for that.
What did you learn from that experience? Because it's really pure, right? But what's the lesson from that?
You said no tears, and I'm a big old teddy bear.
I was joking.
There is a lesson.
Yeah, what is the lesson?
That people are good. Nobody said no. Nobody said we're not going to do it.
How much of that do you think is because you weren't asking them for anything?
No, and I told
them. It wasn't
everybody.
Like Coca-Cola was trying to do it. It wasn't political.
No.
It wasn't. It was just like.
It's a kind of a different time, though, too.
It was a different time. It's funny you say that because, I've been called on many occasions to try to duplicate that. And I keep telling people, you don't understand. That's not going to happen with radio. Mm-hmm. Because back then, a minute advertising on radio was probably, $20,000. Now, $500,000 for a big station? So they're not going to stop 10 minutes. That's $5 million. Mm-hmm. They're not going to do that. So that's what's changed. But, you mentioned Coca-Cola and all that. No, I didn't get paid. I didn't want to get paid. All I wanted to see is, if we could do this and if people would listen. And I think it was one of the most satisfying things. There's a lot of positive to this story. There's also a hell of a lot of negative that, we'll talk about some other time.
Well, no, we'll get into that a little bit. You got a phone call, I believe, about a week before this thing was ready to go down.
I did.
And why don't you tell us that? Because this is, having worked in marketing my whole life, this is like the ultimate marketing guy story. So what happened when your phone rang that day?
So the phone rings that day. Now, this is before the simulcast.
Yeah, you're about like a week before.
About a week, week and a half before.
You got it all lined up. You've done all the work.
Press is out there.
You've created NATO of radio, and it's all it's all loaded, and you get a little phone call from a special friend.
Well, unfortunately, he's passed away by now, so I'm going to be nice. But, yes, I got a phone call from a guy, and he was in charge of an organization called USA for Africa. So We Are the World was the record, okay? That's all that was. Quincy put it together, but it was put together for this project to raise money. And that's what they're all about, right, raising money. They want to feed the hungry, feed the people over in Africa at a time when it was devastating over there. It really was.
Famine.
Yeah, famine was incredible. So this guy calls me up, and he says, hey, is this Bob Wolf? I said, yeah. And I've been getting nothing but amazing phone calls. I'm sky high, dude.
Where's the attaboy?
I'm sky high. And dude says to me, what the hell are you doing? And I said, wait a minute, who is this? He said, my name's Ken Cragen, and I am the president or whatever of USA for Africa with We Are the World. I said, oh, great. So you're calling because... He said, what the hell are you doing? Who gave you permission to do this? And I'm just like, what the hell is he saying? I said, sir, I got all this stuff lined up ready to do. What do you mean who gave me permission? I said, I'm a disc jockey. Your record's public domain. It came in my office to play. It's public. I can play it whenever the hell I want to play it.
Yeah.
He said, well, I'll call you back.
He said, "Wait, like, you're screwing."
That's a good point. I'll call you back.
You're screwing up our whole marketing.
That's
plan.
What he said. That was the second. No, that was the first call. He said, "You're screwing up our whole marketing plan." He said, "We've got all this laid out," and I said, "Sir, do you realize that I have almost every radio station? I'll call you back." Literally, just hung up. He was like, and I'm sitting there in shock. I'm going like, "What in the hell?
That's the best.
Are they going to sue me? What are they? Shit." So he calls me back the next day. And I'm on the air. So they passed it back on the air, and I didn't have it live. So I pick up the phone. He says, Wolf, this is Cragen again. I said, hey, Ken. He says, listen, this is incredible. He says, what you've done is just absolutely amazing. I'm going like, is this the same guy that called me yesterday? He says, no, really. I've looked into it. He said, this has never been done before. He said, this is just, what a hell of an idea. He said, I'll tell you what, I want to get together with you after we do this, and let's see how it comes off. And I said, geez, and all of a sudden I'm like, okay, God, now I feel great. So another couple, I guess a week goes by, and, you know, we got all these things happening. I had a stepson that I had involved at the radio station that we had a kid from Russia talk to each other through satellite. That right before we started the record worldwide, I had 18. So about the size of this studio, we had 18 camera crews from around the world. Literally, I mean, Rome, Georgia, at they have a levee behind the radio station. There's helicopters landing on the levee. It was insane.
It's so much better, by the way, like that. You think of, like, even some of the phrases we say. I'm 50, right? You know, water cooler conversation, you know, drink more Ovaltine with the decoder ring. Like, to have that community feeling, you know, to just have that song get played around the world at the same time. You couldn't do it today. If you did, it would be an influencer on TikTok and hashtag ad, or I don't even know what it would be, but it was just a pure moment out of a crazy idea.
It was
a lot of follow through.
And I thank you for recognizing that, because that's exactly what it was. I mean, and I say, I don't mean to get cheesy, but, you know, there's something bigger than us in this world. And if you really watch that tape and forget about me, but watch what happened that day and the way people reacted, you had some of the biggest disc jockeys in the world. You know, Rick D's Disco Duck guy back in his day, one of the best, you know, from all over LA, literally get interviewed and say, you know, this is really special. I mean, the fact that a piece of music just stopped the whole world. And it literally stopped the world. I mean, when you see that, they go to Germany, they go to England, and they show you how this record just changed everything for 15 minutes. So, I mean, to sit there and watch that, of course, it felt like an amazing accomplishment. But more than that, it was like, Jesus Christmas, I felt chosen to kind of help lead this thing, you know, without even knowing what the hell we were doing. And that's true. So I had to kind of get the other guy involved, the guy that kept telling me to go back in the room.
Yeah.
Because he was part of the story, you know, and he never wanted anything really to do with it anymore. I had my 15 minutes of fame, blah, blah, blah. I said, dude, it ain't about fame. I've worked at the biggest in the world. This is about what we just did, what just happened. So it was a big day. And that was 39 years ago. And so I'm going to go ahead, and if you don't mind, I'm going to continue for about another 2 minutes on this, because there's something pretty special that I'm working on.
Yeah.
And maybe it's too soon, or you had it later on in the, you know, no, I don't know how much later on in the show we got.
But we're unscripted.
We are? Okay, good. So that's amazing. You're the first. So the difference between now and then, and we said we could never duplicate this with radio. You couldn't do it with radio. There was no internet back then. There wasn't any cell phones. You know, I was 3 weeks in a phone on the couch at the radio station calling all over the world, you know, people, different times of the day, different time zones. But it's 39 years later, and the Ken Cragen thing, I guess I should finish that.
Yeah, huh? You got done dirty here, and I'll help you with it, because my understanding when we talked about it was, They wanted you to do another. You were basically queued up to win an award, even at the American Music Awards.
Yeah.
So you're going to get recognized. You got Quincy and Lionel
Jackson.
Michael, you're in the Holy Trinity of the We Are the World, because you're the guy with the idea that made a song called We Are the World get distribution in that type of way. So you're basically on a victory lap. And what happens to you if you get the rug pulled out from under you?
So, obviously, the thing was a huge success, and Ken calls me back after, and he says, so, I got to backtrack. Before Ken calls me back, I called a friend of mine, John Schneider from the Duke, and I'm not dropping names, he's just a friend, Jesus Christmas, the old Bo Duke boy.
Love him.
And I called John, and I said, hey, bud, I said, I've got this crazy idea, and this is like 2 days after what I happened, so he knew what had happened. I said, I want to do this again next year. I said, let's just keep this up and keep trying. I said, I've already made some phone calls, and they're willing to do this again next year. So here we are. We got it planned. You know, in 3 or 4 days, guys, literally this thing grew out of nowhere. Like, he's doing it again. This is going to be great. But this year we had a different idea. We wanted young people. We wanted a 15-minute ceasefire. I know it sounds crazy, but we literally got to Reagan and Gorbachev to write a letter for 15-minute worldwide cessation of hostile activities around the world for the second year of We Are the World when we play the song. 15 minutes, just so we can show kids that as adults, we can act like adults and stop fighting and killing each other.
So you got it all queued up again.
Everything's ready to go.
It's going to be a sequel and a good one.
Bring the phone. Here he is, Mr. Wonderful. Hey, Bob, it's Ken. Hey, Ken, how you doing? He said, listen, you know Quincy's got you set up now for the American Music Awards in January, and Michael and Quincy are going to come out, and they're going to give you this award. It's a humanitarian award. It's amazing. You know, and I know this sounds crazy, but you've been mentioned for the Nobel Peace Prize, and I'm going, okay, now we're getting crazy. He says, no, but we want you to come out to L.A. We got the reservations done. He said, this is great. I said, thanks, man. I mean, I'm just blown away. You know, like you said, you know, I'm in the little triangle there. I'm with the boys.
Yep.
You know, I just screwed up in the music industry, and I've just got a door back in again, you know, to help and get involved. So he says, hey, I got to ask you something, though. And same phone call. And I said, what's that? He says, we got a project coming up next year, and I want you to help me. He was like, well, God, I honestly was honored at first, you know. So, well, thank you. What can I do? He said, well, I want you to do the same thing you just did with We Are the World with this other record we're doing. And I just said, oh, boy, Ken. I said, we're already doing We Are the World next year. Well, he just stopped for a minute and then said, oh, no, you're not. And I'm going like, oh, God. Ken, this is already going already. You know, again, we've got this thing going. We're doing a project called Hands Across America. I don't know how old anybody is. But
I remember it.
It was the idea we were supposed to hold hands and form a big line all the way across the nation, and they couldn't get enough people, and they got cows and everything to do it.
Yep.
Anyway, it was a big scam, and I kind of felt it in the beginning, and I said to Ken, because ego was not Bob Wolf did this project. The reason this project worked, Ken, was because I had 46 of the top artists in the world on a record.
Cool, all formats.
All formats, jazz, you know, anything could play this song and be part of this because of that.
Yeah.
So I said, so who's on this record? He said, well, Kenny Rogers. Well, I love Kenny, don't get me wrong. And I said, and? Well, and in the Atlanta Choir. I said, Ken, no one's going to play that. I said, especially people across the world, who the hell's going to care about Hands Across America? I said, this is an American project you're talking about. We're still doing the world. Well, I got to tell you something. You can't do that. I need your help. And I said, okay, let me ask you this. How long's the record? So I'm really dickering, trying really hard to back up and please this son of a gun.
You're trying to find something that works.
Something that worked, you know? I mean, you're building me up, and then you're kicking me straight in the ass, you know, and tearing me down right in the same phone call. And I'm trying to, like, keep it halfway balanced, and I'm going like, dude, John Schneider's helping me with this. We got this done. You know, it's already happening. I said, we talked to Senator Sam Nunn. I mean, I'm talking to everybody. He's going, Bob, I need you to do Hands Across America. I said, so how long is that record? It's 3 minutes and change. I said, perfect. I'll do both of them. 3 minutes and change, 6 minutes, 20 seconds, 10 minutes, top of the hour news. Boom, we're out.
And all you're doing is playing music that's already been released. So you don't even need to ask permission.
I didn't.
So you find a solution. Let's put them together, 10 minutes.